The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
The men's basketball team at Dartmouth votes union. The school's response, big deal. What happened in Minneapolis when the city council tried to give Uber and Lyft drivers a raise? And today on the show, the president of the United Steelworkers and the United Faculty of Florida. Welcome to the Thursday, March 21st edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Mr. Dave McCall will be our first guest on the show today. Dave is president of the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. For complete updates, usw.org. In fact, yesterday, they just endorsed President Joe Biden for re-election. I'm sure Dave is going to talk about that. But the big issue is U.S. Steel. And it was a week ago today that President Biden came out in opposition to the planned sale of U.S. Steel to Nippon Steel in Japan, saying that the United States needs to maintain strong American steel companies powered by American steel workers. And certainly that got the attention of Dave McCall. Now, Dave has been very, very vocal on this issue. And the big problem with this, national security, Dave is quoted as saying, allowing one of our nation's largest steel manufacturers to be purchased by a foreign-owned corporation leaves us vulnerable when it comes to meeting both our defense and critical infrastructure needs. The president's statements should end this debate. U.S. Steel must remain domestically owned and operated. So we'll get the backstory here. How this happened, how they got to Biden, and how many other organizations are actually speaking out on this. When this first came out, there were many of the opinion that, hey, it's a done deal. Can't turn it around. Well, right now, when the president of the United States speaks out, there's a lot of people that listen and need to listen. So Dave McCall will be our first guest on the show. Teresa Hodge will be joining us later in the show, and she is president of the United Faculty of Florida. Their website is myuff.org. And this is a giant union. They represent about 25,000 faculty members at all 12 Florida public universities, 16 state and community colleges, 4 K through 12 lab schools, and at the private institution St. Leo University. The United Faculty is also the voice of 8,000 graduate assistants at 4 universities with at-large membership status for individual faculty at non-union colleges. A little background on Teresa. She is a fighter. She is the first Afro-Caribbean female president at the United Faculty of Florida. She's from St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, and her background is mathematics. She's been an active union member for over 20 years, and her leadership role did not begin until about 12 years ago. So we're going to talk about what's going on in Florida, and there is a lot. Pretty much DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion is a bad phrase today, and this has resulted in terminations at the University of Florida that pretty much halted administrative assignments, DEI administrative assignments, for 15 faculty members. They've also removed sociology from the general education curriculum. Teresa's also going to talk about some legislation, one in particular, House Bill 1291, which involves educator preparation programs, a bill that mirrors provisions established in the Stop Woke Act that Governor DeSantis put forward as soon as he took office in the state of Florida. So Teresa Hodge, president of the United Faculty of Florida. Website myuff.org is the website. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. Well, earlier this month, we reported on the Dartmouth College men's basketball team's historic vote to form a union. Well, on Monday of this week, the school said that it will not enter into collective bargaining with the newly formed union. Dartmouth spokesperson Jana Barnello explained that the college would actually defy any National Labor Relations Board order requiring it to bargain with the players' union. The school's appeal of the NLRB's regional director's decision classifying the athletes as employees is still pending before the full board. Now, if the board rejects the appeal by Dartmouth, Barnello stated that the school will continue to refuse to bargain with the union in order to spark unfair labor practice proceedings. By taking these steps, the school hopes to get the matter reviewed by a federal court. So that's the game plan there. Let's go to Minneapolis. Now, last week, the city council there voted 10-3 to override the mayor's veto of a minimum wage for rideshare drivers. Now, the bill guarantees rideshare drivers the local minimum wage, which is $15.57 an hour, by mandating pay of $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute. Well, Lyft responded to the bill, saying that while it supports minimum earning standards for drivers, the standards should keep service affordable for riders. Uber expressed disappointment in the decision, saying that the council has kicked Uber out of Minneapolis and put 10,000 people out of work. Both rideshare companies have warned that rider rates would double if they had to pay drivers that wage. Uber and Lyft have threatened to stop operating in the Twin Cities on the 1st of May when the ordinance goes into effect. Now, Minneapolis's mayor and Minnesota's governor, both Democrats, have vetoed rideshare minimum wage bills, saying they make rideshare services too expensive for users. Just a note here, this is one of many efforts nationwide to ensure wages and benefits for gig workers. Obviously, there's some balance here, and they're trying to work it out in the city of Minneapolis. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Dave McCall on behalf of the United Steelworkers coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield, labor's trusted health partner, bringing people, communities, and care together to transform the future of health. For more information, please visit anthem.com/labor and trust. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to line number one and welcome back one of our great sponsors here on America's Workforce, and that would be the United Steelworkers, led by Dave McCall, who took over the presidency 6 months ago following the passing of Tom Conway. And the big story, U.S. Steel. A week ago today, President Biden said, not a good idea. Dave McCall, I know you've been working pretty hard on this situation. Maybe you can give us the backstory here on what made the president say this, because, I mean, there was some time that passed here, and obviously this is a good thing, especially for the steelworkers. So it's all yours, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, thanks, Flash. I hope you're doing well. Certainly appreciate all you do for labor. Look, we recognize, as most people do, Japan is an ally, but they're not necessarily an economic ally. We've had lots of issues with them over unfair trade cases over the years where they have sold product here in this country at less than what it costs them to make it, or they subsidize it directly. And their sudden ownership of the U.S. steel facilities puts real issues at risk in terms of national defense or critical infrastructure, or even supply chain issues. There's real overcapacity of steelmaking in Japan and with their JV partners in China, and they need to continue to export into the U.S. market. And I'm concerned, and our members are concerned, that if they take over those assets, slowly but surely, we'll lose blast furnace production in this country. And that's a real issue, as I said, in terms of national defense. And, of course, our job security and our long-term ability to maintain and work in those facilities that we've done for over 100 years.
Now, Nippon has said that there will be no job losses. However, their history with labor is not that great. Can you reference that, listeners here, Dave?
I think there's some, it really needs to be publicized what they say and then what they are really doing. First of all, Nippon is not going to sign the contracts. It's a skeleton subsidiary based here in the U.S. called Nippon Steel North America. Really no assets, no anything. Nippon says they'll guarantee the contracts, but of course they're not enforceable because they're not subject to federal court. Nippon's not. And they also say, yeah, there'll be no layoffs and there'll be no plant shutdowns. And then when they meet with us, they give us a document that says that, except if there's a change in the business plan. Well, if you've been dealing around collective bargaining for any amount of time or had any exposure to it, you know that they change their business plan like they change their socks. So that's no guarantee at all.
No. And you weren't even advised on this. They did this without even consulting the workers. Is that right?
We have provisions in our labor agreement that talk about our right to bid on transactions like this and a right to have information, and absolutely had no contact with them at all. And then they show up after the transition or transactions announced and say they want to be partners and they want to invest in our facilities and really have an ongoing positive relationship. By the way, they say they'll invest in our facilities. We ask them where. And they say, well, we don't really know, but we're glad to talk to you about it after the closing of the deal. I mean, they are so insincere and disingenuous in what they say in public and what they say to us that any attempt to have any kind of relationship with them or be able to support them goes way by the wayside.
So, Dave, after the announcement last week by Biden, what's the next step at this point?
Well, we do have grievances in that where they violated the collective, where U.S. Steel has violated the collective bargaining agreement. So we'll continue with those. But frankly, with the president saying that it ought to remain an American steel company with American ownership, you would think at this point they would understand that they're not going to get a positive result from the CFIUS review. So we're hoping that they decide that they sort of just go away. And that's, yeah, at the end of the day, that's the real look. Institutional investors in U.S. Steel are focused on the short term offer of $55 a share for this company, not the long term security of the steel industry or U.S. defense of the steel workers. So, you know, you read a lot of stuff in the paper and they've got a lot of rhetoric, but it really is just about that short term view about, I want to Wall Street, I want to get my $55 a share.
Yeah, it's all about the money. Yeah. Now, I know Cleveland Cliffs put a bid in, less than Nippon. Now, are they back in play right now? Are they, because of what happened with Biden last week, are they back in play? Have they indicated, hey, you know what, maybe we could work something out?
They have indicated that. And listen, we assigned our right to bid to Cleveland Cliffs because they made real commitments to us about investing in the facilities and maintaining and signing the collective bargaining agreement. And making, you know, one of the things that's significant to us is our profit sharing. Well, Cleveland Cliffs is a public company and they will report their financials and we can verify that profit sharing. Nippon will have no public reporting on financials, but they tell us, you know, trust us, we'll give you the right numbers. Well, I know from past experience, you don't trust people that say, trust me. You trust people that put their name on the document. So,
yeah.
But Cliffs is in and still interested, and I think they'd be a good owner.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, too, getting back to national security. I mean, that says a lot in itself, and that should stop this in its tracks. Do we have to somehow prove national security, a threat to national security, if U.S. Steel goes away? I don't know. I'm just wondering about that.
And it's a pretty complicated process, the CFIUS review process. But clearly, even from the past experiences of the government, they recognize the steel industry as a critical part of national defense. I mean, just think about it. If over the next few years, Nippon would decide that they were going to focus on electric arc furnaces down in Arkansas and not rebuild or replace or repair our blast furnaces, we would be very limited to additional blast furnace production here in this country. And you need the blast furnace production for many of the critical infrastructure and national defense issues that can't be made in an EAF. It hasn't been made in the EAF yet. So,
one more question here regarding U.S. Steel. I'm just wondering, now with Biden on board, you've been very vocal. Any other organizations, you know, it's going to take a lot to turn this around. And I know there's a number of organizations out there that are pretty much saying the same thing that you're saying to me on the show today. I'm wondering if you could reference that. I mean, is it starting to grow right now? Or are we building a movement here to stop this deal?
Listen, there are lots of trade organizations. There's lots of both Republican and Democratic legislators support, both federally and on the state level. So a lot of people recognize the real threat that this brings to long-term steelmaking capacity in this country. And by the way, you know, Nippon says we're going to follow U.S. Steel's plan. Well, U.S. Steel has been shutting down blast furnaces over the last few years, and Cleveland Cliffs have they been building them and putting new innovative environmental protections in there, like using hydrogen and carbon capture and the rest of that. So that's about the long-term continuation of blast furnace production, and that's important to all of us as steel workers and as American citizens.
Well, Dave, that says it all. We're going to follow their plan. They're shutting down plants, so that's what they're going to do. Oh, my gosh. Yep. This is ridiculous. Just ridiculous. Well, I want to switch gears here, and I saw the big announcement yesterday by the steelworkers that you are endorsing President Biden for reelection. And I kind of saw this coming. I'm just wondering, how does this work? Do you do a polling of members and say, hey, you know what? We've got this guy. We got that guy. How are we gonna support him? Can you walk us through that real quickly?
Yeah, sure. I appreciate the opportunity to do that. Over the last several months, We have engaged in a process with our members over surveys about what's important to them. And at the same time, we've developed questionnaires and sent them out to the candidates, and they respond. And our members, after, you know, looking at the surveys, they value the most retirement security, affordable health care, labor law reform that allows us to have leverage in gaining new contracts. And they think about the long-term security of their jobs. So, you know, we send out questionnaires and we ask them to respond. President Biden responded in the most positive way about the issues that are highlighted by our members. The other candidate that seems to be the presumptive challenger in the Republican Party did not respond, just completely ignored it. So it was pretty easy to determine who our members thought was most helpful for them. And at our executive board meeting this week, we analyzed all that and unanimously have endorsed President Biden. And look, think about this. There's been lots and lots of trade issues over the last few decades, and we're constantly fighting in Washington about stopping unfair trade. And that's one thing, but that's really kind of a short-term fix. If you think about, okay, we've got protection from this unfair trade coming into the country, but what's our next step? Well, if you think about the infrastructure bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS and Science Act that the president has put together on a bipartisan basis, that's about the long-term security so that there's real opportunity for new jobs, new manufacturing. It's an industrial policy for the first time that we've had in this country since maybe Roosevelt. Maybe Eisenhower. You could argue Eisenhower, too, with the interstate highway. But it's real industrial policy about the future of manufacturing and the supply chain around manufacturing. And it's really one of the strongest things we've got going forward in terms of rebuilding manufacturing in America after decades and decades of real abuse.
Well said, my man. Dave McCall, President, United Steelworkers, USW.org. You can read the whole story there. You take care, my friend. We'll be talking to you down the road, okay? Stay strong.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all you do for labor, Flash.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Teresa Hodge is president of the United Faculty of Florida, and she'll be coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steel workers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, where you could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one, and joining us from the state of Florida, which has had a lot of ups and downs, more downs than ups in recent years. And we're joining right now Teresa Hodge. Now, Teresa is president of the United Faculty of Florida. The website is myuff.org, myuff.org. And we're talking about what has happened in the curriculum at the University of Florida under the direction of Governor Ron DeSantis. Teresa Hodge, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. And I'd like to start this off with a little bit of information on your background. I was reading earlier in the show that you're the first Afro-Caribbean female president at the United Faculty of Florida. Let's talk a little bit about that. And I think this is kind of appropriate, too, because March is Women's History Month. We just commemorated Black History Month, but I see you are commemorating Black History Awareness, which is 24/7, and this being a leap year, 366 days. I like that. I like your style already. So talk to me about your journey here. Go ahead. It's all yours.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me, and hello to all the listeners out there. Yes, I am from St. Thomas, U.S. Virgin Islands, and I am the first Afro-Caribbean female president of the United Faculty of Florida. And I think what that speaks to as we celebrate Women's History Month, as well as Black History Awareness, is the fact that diversity, equity, and inclusion actually matters, that representation matters. And as a mathematics professor, yes, you heard it here, ladies and gentlemen, I am a math professor. I am in the area of STEM. I am research-based. I am from a physics background, unsteady aerodynamics. I didn't see anyone who looked like me. I have dreadlocks. From the Caribbean, no one who looked like me was in the field, but I am in the field. So I am that representation to many of the students that come through my classrooms. And I think what was happening now in the state of Florida, I am timely as president of United Faculty of Florida for such a time as this, as I like to say, because I am the very thing that I think our governor and his minions in the legislature are trying to stomp out here in Florida.
So because of the way you look, that had to raise a few eyebrows, and it had to probably impede your journey to become president at the United Faculty of Florida. Can we speak to that? Can we get into that? Talk to me about it.
Well, we can get into that, considering the fact that I am in South Florida, Broward County, and there's a very large Caribbean population down here. So when I applied at my higher ed job, which is Broward College, shout out to Broward College, I was not disparaged in any way. I was hired because of my credentials. I was hired because of my experience and my ability to teach math in an approachable way to students of color, because that's primarily the student population that we serve in Broward County, a very diverse population, which still exists today despite the laws to the contrary. And so my journey into unionhood actually, I would always say it started when I was young, because my dad, who was a lawyer, he had friends who were in the industry in the Virgin Islands that at the time was not yet unionized. And I sat on his lap through many a meeting in terms of how to have rights for these workers in the hotels and the taxi drivers and the nurses and all the other groups that we had there. And so I was exposed to it at a young age. But then when I came to Broward College, I wanted to be there because there was a union, because I saw there was a union chapter, and that's why I chose to work at Broward College. And my journey, I started off as a building steward or building rep, as some folks call it, and I just worked my way through, learned the process of the union, the rights and responsibilities of me as a faculty and a professional in my job, as well as what I could do for my union. I served 10 years as a chapter president, so the journey went well. I had training from our national affiliates like the National Education Association, the American Federation of Teachers, as well as the AFL-CIO. We are all affiliated here in the state of Florida. And so I took advantage of all those opportunities. And no, no doors were closed. That's one thing about unionism that I've learned. We're open, we're welcoming, we're inclusive by nature. And so I think I got that training in order so that I can serve in my current role as a president of UFF. So that is my journey. You would think as a STEM professor, you know, where does unionism come in? But it's definitely a part of my path.
Well, if I ever have a math problem, I know who to call now. So I thank you for that.
I'll give you the
now you have. Okay. You've only been president since last November. Let's talk a little bit about the United Faculty of Florida. How many members in the United Faculty right now, Teresa?
So currently we serve about 25,000 members across the state. We are a statewide local of the Florida Education Association, which is currently under the leadership of President Andrew Spahr. And we have approximately 34 higher ed chapters that include public colleges, the state universities, as well as graduate assistants at some of those state universities.
Gotcha. Yeah, Andrew's a good guy. He's been on the show many, many times. I love to hear his perspective, and I learned a lot through our conversations with him. And that being said, I know your governor has not been very friendly to unions here, and he's trying to decertify them. Is the United Faculty of Florida on the hit list here?
Yes, we are, because we are a local of FEA, the Florida Education Association, but we're a little different because we are a statewide local. And so for us, it's about the individual chapters that need to be recertified. We've already had 26 chapters go through the process. We're waiting to hear back on about 23 of them. Three have already been renewed and have made it through the process, and we have about 8 that are up and coming. So even within our own statewide local, we have to go through this process for each chapter in order to be recertified.
And explain to us, Teresa, if you would do that for our listeners, what you have to do, because didn't he, Governor DeSantis and the legislature there, kind of raise the threshold for union membership in a certain local? Can you explain that part?
Oh, yes. And so in 2023, initially there was a bill, Senate Bill 256, that required a minimum of 60% membership in terms of dues-paying members. And we had to show proof of that for our renewal, a minimum of 60%. And initially in the legislation was a form, like a membership form that had to be completed, but it was not considered mandatory at the time. And so what we believe the legislature and governor are doing now is trying to double down on this. And that's through Senate Bill 1746, where even though in this bill they loosened up the audit requirements, they doubled down on the form, and now that will be mandatory. And so it's not sufficient for at least 60% of our members to say yes to the union by actually choosing to pay their dues directly to us. But we now have to have those same members, 60% or more membership, to fill out this form. And it is not currently in practice, but the minute the governor signs the bill into law, then it will become the law of the land for the moment. And this will be moving forward as well. Now, remember, this is annually. This is not a one-time deal. Every year, all of our chapters and every public sector union in the state of Florida has to go through this process. So it is very cumbersome, and they keep trying to tie our hands. But I tell you what, no matter how hard they come against us, we're ready, we're hunkering down, we're doing the work, we're grinding it out. Our members are focused and organized, and they are saying yes to their unions, not only by paying dues through FEA, so Florida Education Association, they have a proprietary dues collection system. They're saying yes to that, and our numbers are showing. And so, they're coming against us with these union-busting tactics, but I feel very very strongly that as a union, not just USF, but all of Florida Education Association, as well as our union siblings who are out there, that we will show them that, yeah, we've got what it takes to do what we do, because that's what we're about.
Well, I tell you, there's a lot of solidarity all through America. And I know when people are pushed, you got to push back. You really got to push back. And you got to work harder just to stay in place. That's the crazy part about it. Yes. Let me ask you this, Teresa, because I know I could tell you're a fireball. I know you're not taking this lying down. And when there's pushback, you push even harder. Have you had an opportunity to talk to some of these? Now, I'm sure it's tough to approach DeSantis, but some of these lawmakers that are falling in line with him. And did you ever get the opportunity to say, why are you attacking me? I'm trying to do my job. We're trying to get our wages up where they should be. We want to get our benefits where they should be. Why are you doing this? I mean, I just don't understand this ridiculous attack, a vicious attack on unions, especially in the public sector. Has that conversation happened with you, Teresa?
Not with me directly, but I can tell you that through our public policy advocacy team at FEA, that those conversations have happened. I actually had the opportunity to go to Tallahassee and do lobbying with our fellow governance board members for FEA as the higher ed representative. And I attended a House meeting, House chamber meeting, pursuant to this actual bill, this Senate Bill 1746. And Senator Black is the one who brought it forward. And his reasoning, as he testified before the House committee, was that, you know, we need to hold unions accountable. We need to make sure that these folks actually are willing and want to pay dues to these unions, as if we're some easily out there corrupt, evil, dark force, and they're trying to save the members from themselves. It's just really interesting to sit and listen to some of these legislatures as they push their rhetoric and their falsehoods, false narratives to get what they want. But we showed up in force, and yeah, there was some murmuring and some feedback. We had to be told several times, please be quiet. But yeah, it's just amazing that they really and earnestly do believe that they're on the side of rights when they're not. And it doesn't make, we even offered amendments. Amendments were offered to make the bill better, stronger, to be more reasonable, but it was all rejected. And so there you have it. So much for consensus making. I mean, that's just something that you learn as a union member when you deal with negotiations and bargaining. You learn that it's a give and take and there should be consensus, but you don't get that sense in our legislature. That is not there. They want what they want, and that's it. There was no compromise, even though we offered. So that's the sense that I got, is that they really do think, no matter how wrong it is, that they're doing right by people and holding us accountable. But folks choose to pay dues in Florida. We're not an agency fee state where dues are automatically taken from you. You already choosing to pay dues. You have to sign a form already. We have our own membership forms where you have to sign up and say in writing and a signature, a wet signature, that you want to pay dues. So why do we need an additional form that now will be required through the Public Employees Relations Commission, or PERC? Why do we now need this additional form? So that's where we are. Again, I just think it's just a matter of disruption, honestly, to see if they can bust the union and break us up. But if anything, they brought us together more. We've come together more strongly. We're more united than ever. The solidarity, oh my goodness, I can't even speak to that, across the country is phenomenal. And we have support. And we have union siblings out there who know, so goes Florida, so goes your state. Coming to a state near you. So pack a lunch, people, because this is not the end of it.
Oh, I know that. I know. We're in the state of Ohio, and they're bringing that same crap over here. So you don't have to tell me what's going on in America. Yeah. All right, Teresa, I got to take a quick break here. Teresa Hodge joining us on our live line today. She's president of the United Faculty of Florida. Do check out their website, myuff.org. We'll continue the conversation. We're going to talk about what the governor and the legislature is doing to school curriculums. That story right after this.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Founded in 1887, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters represents the employees responsible for tirelessly constructing and maintaining the national rail system in America. For more than a century, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees has proven they have what it takes to protect its members and meet the ever-changing challenges of the rail industry. Today, the BMWED continues to fight for job security, fair wages, better benefits, and safer, more modern work environments. For more information, please visit BMWE.org. This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit BACWeb.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Labor's International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those 5-star ratings, so please keep them coming. And by the way, if you like a show, please share the show. We count all the downloads, and we had a banner year last year. We want to keep that momentum going in 2024. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Teresa Hodge, who is the president of the United Faculty of Florida. Website myuff.org, talking about what the governor and the legislature in Florida have done to the public sector. Today, we're talking about public sector teachers and those in higher education, like the United Faculty of Florida. So let's talk about what they're doing to the curriculums here. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. Apparently, those are not good words when it comes to the governor and the legislature there. What have they done at the United Faculty of Florida, Teresa?
Well, what happened recently, and I think most folks who have any form of social media out there heard that University of Florida got rid of DEI staff, and the part of that that we're focused on are the 15 faculty who lost their assignments in that department. And so we're concerned about that because that's a work condition, and they would need to be made whole if that definitely impacts them. So that is something that we're looking at. But in general, in terms of the attack against diversity, equity, inclusion, that has to do with the fact that the governor last year signed into law the fact that the colleges and universities cannot use state funds to actually promote diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. And so that is where this is coming from. These attacks on DEI, this is the part that I want people to really hear when I say this. These attacks on DEI in Florida, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and I am all three of those. I am diverse, I'm equitable, and I am inclusive. But these attacks will continue, and it's not just going to remain in the higher ed system. I need folks to understand that these attacks could move beyond higher ed, the higher ed space, into spaces where our citizens live, work, and play. We already see this happening. Well, where? Okay, I got you. Look at the erasure of sociology as a core curriculum offering for Florida students. And, you know, the reticence of our legislators in allowing educators to teach a complete and honest history about our past. God forbid we know the truth about slavery and how we got here. And so these are the things that are happening. The effects of such decisions can go beyond the classroom and perhaps even as an unintended consequence, potentially produce an illiterate populace that could be easily manipulated due to their lack of knowledge or inability to even think critically. So I see it as more than just curriculum. I see it as societal, as an issue. And I just feel that Florida students deserve so much more than what they're getting. All our students are to these political hacks, in my opinion, all they are pawns. Pawns that they would move on the chessboard to gain whatever it is that they feel is a better Florida and a better citizenry. But I think it's antithetical to what they think it's doing. They should be focused on providing an education system that challenges our students and forces them to look at the world around them through a critical lens. It is not about agreeing or disagreeing. It's about getting the truth and the facts, and then censoring that through analytical and critical thinking. That's what it's about. And we're not going to get that. So, you know, shame on them for trying to stifle that kind of critical and analytical thinking in our future citizenry. And they're doing it through education prep programs. Like, can I talk about that for a second?
Go ahead.
There's House Bill 1291, and it had a companion in the Senate Bill 1372. And the bill, they snuck in a provision in that bill that prohibits courses within our teacher, our post-secondary educator, and even professional learning certification and school leader prep programs from, are you ready for this? Distorting historical events or teaching curriculum that asserts systemic racism, sexism, oppression, and privilege as inherent in U.S. institutions. Far be it from us to teach the truth about systemic racism. Oh, my goodness. So this is a continuation of language that was litigated in Senate Bill 266 from last year that Judge Walker, a federal judge, found violated the First Amendment and prevented the act from being implemented in higher ed. So they couldn't move forward with that, so they snuck it into this. I'm sorry, I'm getting heated. So these are the things that are happening in Florida in the higher ed space. And our citizenry, they need to understand that elections matter and elections have consequences. And it is not always, please hear me carefully, people, it is not always just about abortion. Public education is a privilege. It is a right that our society has granted to us based on the ancestors that preceded us. We are standing on their shoulders, okay? And we're now zeroing back the clock to things that they fought for. I have this conversation with my 90-year-old father all the time, who was around for the civil rights movement, and he cannot believe that he is today having to see us deal with things that they thought they had conquered and accomplished many years ago. And I will stop there because I'm getting wound up even more.
Well, we want you to get wound up because I'll tell you, these things are not right. They're not right at all. So as far as their MO goes on all this, and they figure since public universities, colleges and universities are getting tax money, they can do what they want. Is that how they're approaching this in Florida?
Well, that's exactly right. There was a threat last year with Senate Bill 256 and Senate Bill 266, and the year before with House Bill 7 and House Bill 233, where, you know, the governor threatened, you know, holding funds to these public institutions, colleges and universities, unless they toe the line. And so, yes, they are literally connecting it to the release of funds that we already need anyway. We're already underfunded. So it's just a cycle that they have created. And this is now, I think, their third year in a row where they're using that, especially now that they have a supermajority. They're really lauding it over us, as it were.
We're speaking with Teresa Hodge, who is president of the United Faculty of Florida. Do check out their website, myuff.org, and we're talking about what has happened, and this is almost like lightning speed in the last couple of years. So many changes in the Florida education system here. Now, just to clarify, you were talking earlier about the removal of sociology from the general education curriculum at various colleges and universities. So as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, right now in the state of Florida, anybody going to a college or university there that's publicly supported, they're not going to learn about what happened in America's past. For instance, slavery. Are we at that point right now, Teresa?
Yes. That's the short answer is yes. And you have to look at it in combination. And that's something else that I want these listeners to understand and your audience to understand. Even though these bills came one at a time, you need to look at the big picture of how they intersect. You have to look at the DEI ban and how that intersects with sociology being removed from the curriculum. And I think if you look at the big picture, you see the plan unfolding, in my opinion. You can see the plan unfolding as a concerted attack on higher ed, a concerted attack on not just curriculum, but in terms of programs and offerings that we have for our, dare I say it, our diverse student population in this state. Yes, I said the D word. And so I think that is something worth noting, that this is exactly where Florida is headed because sociology has been removed from the general education curriculum of colleges and the universities. It used to be a core course offering. It is no longer that. And I think we're one of the few states where this is true. And it's just, to me, sad that this puts Florida students at a critical disadvantage in terms of the region nationally or even globally, because they're not going to be able to compete with students in other states where they have access to that curriculum.
So what's the difference between Florida and a totalitarian country like Russia or China? Is there any difference here? Because they control things in those countries, right?
Right. And I'm going to give the PC answer to that. But I just think that this is where we're headed. I don't care how much Governor DeSantis on his presidential stomp campaign talked about Florida being free. Florida is not free. We're less than free if you really take a look at it in terms of things being curbed, ceased, stopped, halted. It's been a challenge living here, to be honest, as an educator. For example, when we talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, when I teach math, I need to make sure that the applications I give my students are applications they can relate to. I'm not going to do a general application that is devoid of culture, devoid of ethnicity, devoid of relativism for my students. They have to be able to relate to it to understand what the heck I'm talking about. Yes, I need you to get to the math, but if it's not culturally relevant to you, it makes no sense to you. And so that is something where folks may not realize that's an intrusion on the curriculum through diversity, equity, and inclusion, but it could potentially even get to that point where they're going into the minutia of all curricula and nitpicking those instances. And so I just think, you know, we need to be careful in Florida. Florida is not free. Let's just get that on the record. And they're doing their best, and he's doing his best. Thank God he's term limited out, but he's doing his best to actually have those types of totalitarian, do as I say, or you won't get this, you know, bow the knee, kiss the ring kind of scenario. That's my visual reference to that.
Well, you got your hand full. You got your hand full, Teresa. No doubt about that. I salute you for what you're standing up to, because I could tell as soon as we started this conversation, I got a fireball on the line here. She's not taking this lightly, not at all.
No,
Teresa
no.
Hodge, President, United Faculty of Florida. Do check out their website, myuff.org. You stay in touch with us and keep up the fight, okay, girl?
I will. Thank you so much for having me on your program.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the sister in the brotherhood and the United Steelworkers Sub-District 1 Director. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.